The following podcast is part of a certified educational activity titled Charting a New Path to Better Outcomes with TROP2 Targeting ADCs in Lung Cancer, Unveiling Potential, Shaping Tomorrow. Access the entire activity and complete the post-test at peerview.com/JVH860. Downloadable slides and practice aids are also available.
Hello and welcome to Charting a New Path to Better Outcomes with TROP2 Targeting ADCs in Lung Cancer, Unveiling Potential and Shaping Tomorrow. My name is Aaron Lisberg. I'm an assistant professor of medicine at UCLA. I'm a thoracic oncologist, and I have the pleasure of being joined by my close colleague and friend, Dr. Nicolas Girard.
I'm Nicolas Girard. I'm the head of the medical oncology at Institut Curie in Paris, in France.
Our goals for today are to augment your knowledge of the rationale for TROP2 targeting therapy in lung cancer, identify characteristics of TROP2 targeting ADCs, and discuss the evidence supporting their use in lung cancer. We're also going to enhance your skills in identifying patients with lung cancer who are most likely to benefit from novel TROP2 targeting ADCs. And we're going to equip you with the skills for optimally using the TROP2 targeting ADCs in the treatment of lung cancer, including the management of adverse events. So the first module today is going to be understanding the basics of TROP2 and TROP2 targeting antibody drug conjugates. So TROP2 in non-small cell lung cancer, this is a high-level overview. TROP2 is a transmembrane glycoprotein that is highly expressed in non-small cell lung cancer as well as other solid tumors. You may be aware of other TROP2 antibody drug conjugates approved in bladder and breast cancer. And this is obviously today's discussion is focused on non-small cell lung cancer, but there's a lot of encouraging data, although no approved agents for TROP2 ADCs in non-small cell lung cancer yet. High TROP2 expression is associated with poor prognosis, which makes it a promising therapeutic target. As you can see on the right-hand slide, there was a retrospective evaluation of overall survival based on TROP2 expression level, either high or no or low TROP2 expression level in adenocarcinoma patients. And you can see the patients that had high TROP2 expression had worse overall survival. You can see IHC staining at the bottom, and there's currently no testing recommendation for TROP2 in disease states. So in terms of antibody drug conjugates, again, you may be familiar with this concept, but let's go through them. So there are many important properties of ADCs, and they're listed here on this slide. A lot of information. Obviously, don't have the time to go in depth, but let's go through these categories and summarize the most important points. So one of the most important points is the antigen. So we want to design our antibody drug conjugates against an antigen that's has high expression on tumors and low or no expression on healthy tissues. This is then designed to be targeted by an antibody, which has high affinity and avidity for this tumor antigen that the molecule is designed against. These antibodies should have a long half-life and high molecular weight. In terms of the linker, which connects the antibody to the cytotoxic payload, which we'll talk about, this needs to be stable in circulation. There are both cleavable and non-cleavable linkers, which essentially allow for this molecule to be inactive in systemic circulation and theoretically only become active when introduced into a tumor cell. And that's where we come to the cytotoxic payload. Again, these payloads are strong chemotherapies that essentially become active once inside a tumor cell. You can see multiple different types of agents listed here on this slide. For the purposes of today and the TROP2 ADCs in non-small cell lung cancer, we'll be talking about topo 1 isomerase inhibitors. The drug to antibody ratio is essentially that how many payloads are on each antibody drug conjugate complex, and those can vary, and certainly a higher number can potentially lead to increased cytotoxicity. So this is a very busy and big table. It is not even comprehensive for the ADCs in clinical development for lung cancer, but it gives you a good sense for the number of different ADCs currently under evaluation in non-small cell lung cancer. An important point to take away, it's not highlighted here specifically, but we do have an approved antibody drug conjugate in advanced metastatic non-small cell lung cancer. It's trastuzumab deruxtecan. It's approved for HER2 mutant non-small cell lung cancer after progression on chemotherapy and immunotherapy, and there are ongoing trials to evaluate it in the frontline setting. With the exception of that drug, we have no other approved antibody drug conjugates in lung cancer right now. Although I will draw your attention as well to the HER3 targeted patritumab deruxtecan. This has shown exciting and encouraging results in EGFR mutant advanced metastatic non-small cell lung cancer and anticipation for potential approval in the coming months. So here's a mechanism of action. Again, a high-level overview. Essentially, these antibody-drug conjugates are introduced into the systemic circulation through a venous infusion. They identify the tumor antigen on the surface of the tumor cell. They bind to the tumor antigen. Then they are then brought inside the tumor cell via lysosome. There's enzymatic cleavage of the linker, which allows the payload to become active only inside the tumor cells. And then they have their cytotoxic payload efficacy and do, in the setting of topo one inhibitors, DNA damaging agents, the setting of MMAE, they affect microtubules. Another important concept to be aware of in terms of ADC mechanism of action is on the far right hand side here. It's called the bystander effect. You can see that at the bottom of the text in the parentheses, essentially denoting the fact that if the payload has become active in a single tumor cell, it can actually diffuse through the plasma membrane. Some of the payload can diffuse through the plasma membrane and kill neighboring tumor cells, which allows for essentially theoretical killing of the entire tumor mass. It also can be important to note that ADCCs can orchestrate ADCC, which can cause additional cell death. So in terms of ADCs, drug to antibody ratio, again, I mentioned this earlier, they can range from 2 to 8, essentially identifying the number of payloads on each antibody. Here's a difference between two HER2 targeted antibody drug conjugates, TDM1 versus TDXD. The drug to antibody ratio for TDM1 is 3, for TDXD it is 8. And, you know, in breast cancer, we have seen better efficacy in many cases with TDXD over TDM1, could be related to this increased drug to antibody ratio. But as we're thinking about these ADCs, it's an important component to consider. And when we're talking today about TROP2 targeting ADCs in non-small cell lung cancer, specifically advanced metastatic non-small cell lung cancer, we're really focused on two drugs. On the left-hand side is sacituzumab govitecan. Again, you may be familiar with this drug. It is approved in both breast and bladder cancer. Here are the components. It's, again, a TROP2 ADC. It is an SN38 payload, which is a topo 1 payload. On the right-hand side is Dato-DXd, which is a TROP2 targeted ADC. It has not been approved in any disease state so far, but we're going to be spending a lot of time today talking about the data that I presented and Dr. Girard recently presented to support the idea that this could be a very effective agent in patients with advanced metastatic non-small cell lung cancer who have non-squamous histology. Again, the payload here is a topo 1 inhibitor, a proprietary topo 1 inhibitor that is distinct from what we see with sacituzumab govitecan. Govitecan here, it's DXD. You can see difference in drug to antibody ratio and certainly difference in the antibody used. So we will now move on to module 2. I have already alluded to what we'll be talking about here, but this is the evolving evidence to support the use of TROP2 targeting ADCs in non-small cell lung cancer. And I like the word, I like the use of the term evolving here because things are rapidly changing. I will be talking about the phase 1 data for Dato-DXd. I will also be talking about TROPION-Lung01 study that I presented at ESMO 2023. But we're really fortunate to have Dr. Girard here today because he'll be talking about the data that was recently presented at ELCC, which provides an update and additional data in the non-squamous population. So things are changing very quickly, and the ELCC data came out, I believe, within the last week to 10 days. So we're going to focus on the second line data and beyond because that's really where the development of these agents has begun, and we have the most data to really discuss and get a good understanding for these agents. So here's the phase 1 trial I was discussing. This is the TROPION Pan-Tumor01 study design. This was specifically focused on patients with relapsed refractory advanced metastatic non-small cell lung cancer, although has subsequently enrolled patients with a variety of tumor types beyond the discussion today, but I just want to draw your attention to that. Importantly, patients were not selected based on TROP2 expression level. We have seen that with this agent, TROP2 expression level has not correlated with response to this TROP2 ADC, Dato-DXd, so it is not an inclusion factor. Patients had to be appropriate age, appropriate performance status, measurable disease, and patients with stable treated brain metastases were allowed, which I think is very important because we see that a lot in advanced metastatic non-small cell lung cancer. There were two components to this phase 1 trial, as is typically the case, a dose escalation component followed by dose expansion. And let's go through some of the data from the trial. So in terms of anti-tumor activity, a number of different dose levels were observed. There were some higher dose levels than the 4, 6, and 8 here evaluated, but they were deemed to be too toxic. So these were the three dose levels that were really evaluated more in depth. Just to kind of jump to the end, 6 milligrams per kilogram was the dose that was decided in terms of moving forward. And so we can focus on that that data there, the objective response rate, 28%. And we can see the waterfall plot, a number of patients across dose levels having very deep responses. And we can see in the spider plot, deep and durable responses for patients. So very encouraging efficacy for these patients. In addition, it was very interesting. You know, we often think of the actionable genomic alteration subset of patients, specifically EGFR, ALK, and ROS1, as having different differential response to some of our standard therapies. And what I'm really referring to is immunotherapy. But with respect to this TROP2 ADC, Dato-DXd, we actually see that patients with actionable genomic alterations do very well with Dato-DXd and potentially even better than the unselected population. So here was a subset of patients from the phase one trial, limited number of patients, but the objective response rate was 35%. Again, waterfall plot similarly showing significant reduction in tumor volume in a number of patients. It's very hard to see on the slide, but we looked at the different actionable genomic alterations and the type of EGFR mutations and prior TKI therapy. The take home is not to go through that like with a fine tooth comb. The take home is that across these different AGAs, we saw efficacy signal. And in terms of safety, which is obviously the other most important point to these agents, on the phase one trial with Dato-DXd, we saw the following toxicity profile. So grade three treatment-related adverse events were seen at the 6 milligram per kilogram dose in 26% of patients. And in terms of the specific toxicities, you can see nausea was the most common and stomatitis essentially very similar. Alopecia, fatigue, and vomiting. So we're going to talk about these toxicities much more in depth when we move to the slides I presented at ESMO regarding TL01. So I'm going to kind of reserve the safety discussion for then. But bottom line is we see some chemotherapy-related toxicities with Dato-DXd, but you'll see there really isn't a lot of bone marrow toxicity seen with this agent. And there are some unique toxicities that we certainly need to be aware of that we are familiar with in oncology, but are unique to this agent, such as stomatitis, dry eyes. ILD is not listed here, but we'll talk about that and infusion-related reactions. So here is the ESMO data that I presented. This was the TROPION-Lung01 study, which is a randomized phase 3 open-label global study. This was run in patients with non-small cell lung cancer that was advanced or metastatic. Patients both with and without actionable genomic alterations were enrolled. Those patients without actionable genomic alterations must have received both chemotherapy and anti-PD agent. Those patients with actionable genomic alterations must have received approved therapies, tyrosine kinase inhibitors, plus platinum-based chemotherapy, and they could or could not have received anti-PD therapy. That was an optional criteria. Stratification factors include histology, actionable genomic alteration status, and anti-PD agent as the most recent prior therapy and geography. These patients were randomized 1:1 to receive Dato-DXd, which is given every 3 weeks, versus our second-line standard docetaxel. And this trial had dual primary endpoints of PFS and overall survival. Secondary endpoints are listed here. So jumping right into the PFS data and the intention to treat population, what we saw was this was a positive trial as it met one of its two dual primary endpoints of progression-free survival and the intention to treat population with a statistically significant benefit observed in favor of Dato-DXd over docetaxel. You can see a hazard ratio of 0.75 here, a more than doubling in the objective response rate for the Dato-DXd treated patients at 26.4% compared to docetaxel at 12.8%. Which is an important factor for our patients, and a duration of response that was longer in Dato-DXd treated patients compared to docetaxel. What was really interesting was the histologic breakdown. So we don't see in the slide set, but you will see in my ESMO presentation, a forest plot that essentially shows across the vast majority of characteristics evaluated, there appeared to be a benefit for Dato-DXd over docetaxel. However, when we looked at histology, we saw a clear divergence in terms of this benefit. On the left-hand side, you can see patients with non-squamous disease, both with and without actionable genomic alterations. You can see a clear benefit to Dato-DXd over docetaxel with respect to PFS, a median PFS benefit of 1.9 months, hazard ratio of 0.63, an objective response rate almost tripling in the Dato-DXd arm, and a much longer duration of response. Interestingly, in the squamous patients, we saw the exact opposite. there was actually numerically improved PFS for the docetaxel-treated patients, hazard ratio greater than 1, a higher objective response rate for docetaxel, and a shorter duration of response for Dato-DXd, pretty definitively telling us that in an unselected squamous cell population, Dato-DXd is not superior to docetaxel. Now, given the fact that actionable genomic alteration patients were the patients that had the best outcomes on trial, it was important to look at the PFS hazard ratio for non-squamous patients without actionable genomic alterations, and we did see a benefit for Dato-DXd, where the hazard ratio here was 0.71. And so ultimately, what the conclusion from this data was that in non-squamous patients with advanced metastatic non-small cell lung cancer, those both with and without actionable genomic alterations, there was a PFS benefit observed with Dato-DXd over docetaxel. In terms of overall survival, the trial has two overall survival analyses built into it, pre-specified. An interim overall survival analysis that I presented at ESMO 2023 and that we'll go through today, and a final overall survival analysis that has not occurred yet, but will be presented at a future meeting. So in terms of the interim overall survival analysis, there was a trend in favor of Dato-DXd over docetaxel, as you can see here, has a ratio of 0.9, but this did not cross the pre-specified boundary for statistical significance at the interim time point. However, again, when we look at the histologic breakdown, we're again seeing that that OS benefit is primarily driven by the non-squamous patients, where the non-squamous hazard ratio for overall survival was 0.77. And in the squamous patients, we really don't see a benefit with a hazard ratio greater than 1. When we listen to Dr. Gerard later during this presentation, we'll see the updates from ELCC and we'll actually see an overall survival curve for the non-squamous patients and additional data in this population to further support the idea that Dato-DXd is superior to docetaxel. Again, the trials continue to final overall survival analysis. In terms of the safety summary, I kind of turfed some of this from the phase one trial because we have a lot more data here. And so I'd like to go through this in depth. So it's important to note that the median treatment duration was longer for Dato-DXd treated patients at 4.2 months compared to 2.8 months for the docetaxel treated patients. Despite this longer duration of treatment, the number of grade 3 or higher treatment-related adverse events was higher in the docetaxel arm at 41% compared to 25% in Dato-DXd arm. This was all. We also observed a higher number of dose reductions and dose discontinuations in the docetaxel arm, and it was important to essentially see that serious treatment-related AEs were similar on both arms of the trial. So going into more specifics, again, there was a lot of information presented here at ESMO. Don't have time to go through this line by line, but as was seen on the phase one trial, stomatitis and nausea were the most frequent treatment-related AEs seen with Dato-DXd. However, they were primarily grade 1 or 2. Hematologic toxicities, including both neutropenia and febrile neutropenia, which we know are problematic toxicities with standard second-line chemotherapy docetaxel, were much more common with docetaxel than Dato-DXd. And importantly, there were no new safety signals observed with Dato-DXd on this trial. In terms of the adverse events of special interest, I did spend some time on this at ESMO 2023. I think it's important to talk about a little more in depth. Here, there are four categories we're going to go over, and I alluded to these earlier during our discussion today. Stomatitis, oral mucositis, ocular toxicities, ILD, and infusion-related reactions. So in terms of stomatitis, oral mucositis, you can see that 54% of patients had an any grade event associated with stomatitis, oral mucositis on the Dato-DXd arm. This number is slightly higher than what we saw on the last slide because this is an umbrella term and captured many different events. Despite this rate of stomatitis, oral mucositis in the Dato-DXd treated patients, only 6% of patients had grade 3 or higher events. And importantly, these events did not interfere with the investigator's ability to administer this Dato-DXd effectively, as there was a very low rate of discontinuation as a result of these events at 0.7%, as you can see on the right-hand side. In terms of the ocular events, they occurred in approximately 20% of patients on Dato-DXd. Dry eye was the most common ocular event, followed by increased lacrimation. But again, these were primarily low grade. ILD is obviously a toxicity that in oncology we're very concerned with, and specifically in lung cancer treatment we're very aware of and concerned about because our patients oftentimes already have pre-existing smoking damage to their lungs and disease in the lungs. So let's go through this data a little more in depth. On the Dato-DXd arm, we can see 8% of patients had an any grade ILD that was independently adjudicated as drug-related and associated with DATE or DXD. Of these events, 3% were grade 3 or higher, and there were 7 grade 5 events. It's important to note that in the 7 adjudicated drug-related grade 5 events, 4 of the 7 patients, the investigator on site identified the cause of death as disease progression, but the independent committee identified that ILD was present as well. Infusion-related reactions do occur with DATE or DXD. They also occur with docetaxel, so 8% of patients in each arm. All events were grade 2 or lower, with the exception of 1 grade 3 event that occurred with DATE or DXD. So in summary, from what I would say is the most robust data set for DATE or DXD, the TROP2-targeted antibody-drug conjugate in advanced metastatic non-small cell lung cancer, the TL01 study presented at ESMO 2023, DATO-DXD is the first ADC to demonstrate a statistically significant improvement in PFS over docetaxel in patients with previously treated locally advanced or metastatic non-small cell lung cancer. Again, given the dual primary endpoint design of the trial, the statistically significant improvement in PFS signals a positive trial. That said, when we look at histology, the PFS benefit was primarily driven by patients with non-squamous histology, and patients with squamous histology did not appear to derive significant benefit from DATO-DXD over docetaxel. As we looked at the high-level safety summary, there were fewer, despite the longer median treatment duration for DATO-DXD-treated patients, there are fewer greater 3 or higher treatment-related adverse events seen with DATO-DXD compared to docetaxel, and no known safety signals were observed, suggesting a globally improved safety profile to DATO-DXD over docetaxel. That said, grade 3 or higher ILD was seen, which highlights the need for careful monitoring and adherence to ILD management guidelines. And as we discussed, the interim OS findings favored DATO-DXD, and the trial is continuing to final analysis. So the conclusion at the time, which as I said, is further supported by the data that Dr. Gerard will present later today in from ELCC, suggests that DATO-DXD is a potential new meaningful therapy for patients with previously treated non-squamous non-small cell lung cancer. And there's some updates since ESMO. So based on the results from the TROPION-Lung01 trial, the BLA was accepted by the FDA, and the EMA has also validated this application. Importantly, this is for patients with non-squamous histology, because we really think that those are the patients that are going to drive the greatest benefit. So I'd like to thank you for your attention, and I would like to turn the presentation over to Dr. Gerard now.
Thank you, Aaron. At the ELCC meeting, I was able to present the updated data from the TROPION-Lung01 trial, and these are data based on the same data cutoff, but with the accurate stratification of patients based on the histology. So we focus on the non-squamous histology patients. These patients actually received either Dato-DXD or docetaxel based on the study design. Looking at the data regarding tumor response for these patients with non-squamous cell carcinoma, response rate was 31% with Dato-DXD, 13% with docetaxel, and the duration of response was higher for Dato-DXD, 7.7 months versus 5.6 months with the docetaxel. Looking at PFS, we see slightly different figures as compared to the first report of the trial. We have here a median PFS with Dato-DXD that was 5.5 months versus 3.6 months for the docetaxel. And this is a hazard ratio of 0.63, meaning a 30% reduction in the risk of disease progression. And you can see here how the curve is separating well quite early in the follow-up and remain separated along with the follow-up. If you look at the PFS rate at 9 months, it moves from 16% to 35% with Dato-DXD. So we see here the benefit in the non-squamous cell histology patients. We were able to look at the key subgroups, age, gender, ethnicity, smoking status, brain metastasis, actionable genomic alteration. And for all these subgroups, we have a benefit with Dato-DXD versus docetaxel. And I would like to focus first on the patients with brain metastasis. We see a consistent benefit in those patients with or without brain metastasis at baseline. And second group of interest are these patients with actionable genomic alteration. And again, we see a benefit both for the patients with genomic alteration and the patients without genomic alteration. And again, this is a reduction of the risk of disease progression of 30% for the patients without genomic alteration and 65% reduction in terms of the risk of progression for the patients with genomic alterations. We have also data from the interim overall survival analysis. So the study is still continuing. We have still a follow-up that is ongoing. At the time of the data cutoff, we see a trend towards a benefit in this subset of patients with a non-squamous histology, median of 13.4 months for Dato-DXd versus 11.4 months for docetaxel, and this is a hazard ratio of 0.79. So this is promising. Not yet statistically significant because the median follow-up remains limited in this analysis. It was a 12-month median follow-up at the time of the data cut. So here with this focus on the non-squamous cell population, we see a benefit with Dato-DXd in terms of response rate, PFS, and the trend for overall survival. Looking at the treatment duration, it is in line with those data. Looking at the safety profile, we can see that the safety profile is in line with that reported for the ITT population of the trial, meaning all the patients, whatever is the histology. In patients with non-squamous histology, we do not have an additional signal or a different signal in terms of safety profile, where we see a majority of side effects related to the gastrointestinal tract with stomatitis, as discussed by Aaron in the ITT population. It's about half of the patients who are developing stomatitis, mostly grade 1 and 2, only 7% grade 3 stomatitis. We see other side effects, mostly grade 1, 2 again, and a limited number of grade 3 side effects. This is probably also highlighting the fact that when you identify the side effects as early as possible, these are not moving to more severe grades, leading to a potential treatment interruption. Looking at this data, we can also see that discontinuation rate was low in this subset of patients with non-squamous histology, less than 10% discontinuation rate with Dato-DXd. Focusing on these adverse events of special interest, stomatitis, again, 57% of patients presenting with stomatitis, but only 7% grade 3 or more. We have 20% of patients who presented with keratitis, again, only 2% grade 3. And for the ILDs, the rate was similar in the non-squamous population as compared to the ITT population, less than 10%, and 2 patients with grade 3, 2 patients with grade 5. And again, the adjudication of these ILDs was done by an independent committee, and some of these ILDs were associated with disease progression. These are the data from the TROPION-Lung05 study, which is a phase 2 study with Dato-DXd with a 6 mg per kg dosing in the patients with non-squamous cell carcinoma and one actionable genomic alteration, meaning EGFR mutation, ALK ROS1 rearrangements, or even BRAF, MET exon 14, and so on. So these patients were enrolled in this phase 2 cohort that showed even higher response rate. In those patients, the response rate was 49%, focusing on patients with EGFR mutation, 34% response rate. So quite interesting for these patients, heavily pretreated patients. These patients could have received one or two prior cytotoxic agent-containing therapies, meaning they have been treated in third, fourth line of treatment after the TKI and after systemic chemotherapy. You can see the waterfall plots with deep responses observed in those patients and prolonged responses, as highlighted by the swimmer plot and the median PFS, which was 5.4 months in the global population of this study. Again, in a late line setting, this is quite promising for these patients. There was no additional safety issue as compared to the TROPION-Lung01 trial. We have also data with sacituzumab govitecan, so the other TROP2 ADC. This is the IMU-13201 study, phase 1-2 dose escalation study with sacituzumab govitecan, 8 mg per kg or 10 mg per kg. And we had part of this study, a cohort with for patients with metastatic non-small cell lung cancer. Like the TROPION-Lung program, there was no selection based on TROP2 expression, and these patients had to be pre-treated with at least one line of treatment. The results from this cohort are the following: 17% response rate, median duration of response of 6 months, PFS 4.4 months. Again, some patients presenting with deep responses and a safety profile that is quite different than that of datopotamab deruxtecan, with again fatigue, some digestive tract side effects, prominence of diarrhea in those patients, mostly grade 1-2, but also hematological side effects more frequent than those observed with datopotamab deruxtecan. Neutropenia, anemia reported in this study. And this is in line with the safety profile of sacituzumab govitecan that was assessed in other solid cancers. EVOKE-01 is a randomized study of sacituzumab govitecan as a 10 mg per kg dosing versus docetaxel. So pretty similar designs on the TROPION-Lung01 study. Patient population in this study are patients who had a disease progression after platinum-based chemotherapy and immune checkpoint inhibitors. Patients with genomic alteration could be enrolled after exposure to at least one line of targeted treatment. And the primary endpoint for this study was overall survival. We do not have the results yet from this EVOKE-01 trial, but we have a press release mentioning the fact that there was a numerical improvement in overall survival, so the primary endpoint of the trial, but this was not statistically significant. So the study is a negative study, did not meet its primary endpoint of overall survival. We do not know that much as of today. Hopefully, the data will be fully presented at future meetings. What we know is that there was more than 3 months difference in the median overall survival in favor of sacituzumab govitecan in the patients who were non-responsive to the last prior immune checkpoint inhibitor line of treatment. This was 60% of patients in this study. So maybe this highlights that a way to select patients, at least for sacituzumab govitecan, could be the response, the pattern of sequencing of treatment from the previous line, meaning that this may reflect a different biology of the disease. Moving to first-line treatment, we are in the setting of moving from these second-line trials versus docetaxel to first-line, because what we want is to use these drugs in combination with immune checkpoint inhibitors, maybe in combination with platinum-based chemotherapy to increase the efficacy. And from the data and the benefit that is observed with datopotamab deruxtecan in the second-line setting, the expectation is that such a benefit could be observed in earlier lines of treatment and in the setting of combination with platinum-based chemotherapy and immune checkpoint inhibitors. We have here the design of the TROPION-Lung02 study, which is a phase 1b study that assessed the combination of datopotamab deruxtecan plus pembrolizumab plus platinum chemotherapy, multiple cohorts, multiple dosing of datopotamab deruxtecan, 4 mg per kg versus 6 mg per kg, pembrolizumab combination with a single dose of 200 mg, and some cohorts with a triplet combination, datopotamab deruxtecan plus pembrolizumab plus platinum-based chemotherapy. So this is phase one. So the objective is safety, and but we can obviously look at response. And the response rate was quite high in those patients receiving a combination of datopotamab deruxtecan plus pembrolizumab, so the doublet in blue, or plus pembrolizumab plus carboplatin, the red patients on the slide, the triplet combination, you can see that the responses are quite deep and also frequent, with a response rate higher than 50% in those cohorts, which is promising as it seems to be higher than what we have with a combination of chemo plus immune checkpoint inhibitor without datopotamab. The safety profile is in line with what is expected. On one end, safety profile of datopotamab deruxtecan that we discussed, with the stomatitis being the most prominent side effect. And this is observed both for the doublet in combination with pembrolizumab and the triplet in combination with chemotherapy and pembrolizumab, mostly grade 1-2 side effect, limiting the proportion of patients presenting with grade 3 stomatitis. And on the other hand, the safety profile of platinum chemotherapy, mostly hematological and digestive tract side effects. EVOKE-02 is a quite similar way to assess how we can integrate an anti-TROP2 ADC in the first-line setting. This is a phase 2 study that has multiple cohorts, combination of sacituzumab govitecan plus pembrolizumab, combination of sacituzumab govitecan plus pembrolizumab plus carboplatinum, again, in the first line setting. Looking at the waterfall plot, again, quite promising, 60% of patients showing a response with those combination. So again, we are in a situation showing that the combination of an anti-TROP2 ADC plus immune checkpoint inhibitors and possibly plus carboplatin is actually increasing the response rates of first-line treatment. The safety profile, again, here for sacituzumab govitecan in the EVOKE-02 trial, in line with what we have seen with sacituzumab govitecan alone, with prominent digestive tract toxicities, diarrhea, and hematological toxicities, a limited number of immune-mediated treatment emergent adverse events. This was also the case with datopotamab plus pembrolizumab. Doesn't seem to observe, we do not observe an increase of treatment adverse events, immune-mediated adverse events, with a combination with a TROP2 ADC. So the next step is obviously a phase 3 randomized study comparing the combination of TROP2 ADCs with a standard of care, which is chemotherapy plus pembrolizumab. Here, one example is the TROPION-Lung07 study comparing datopotamab deruxtecan plus pembrolizumab plus platinum chemotherapy, or datopotamab deruxtecan plus pembrolizumab versus chemotherapy with platinum, pemetrexed, and pembrolizumab, with the primary endpoint of PFS and overall survival. So the strategy here is not only to replace chemotherapy with a datopotamab plus pembrolizumab combination here in patients with an expression of PD-L1 that is not a high expression, and possibly to even achieve higher response rate and prolonged duration of response with a triplet of platinum chemotherapy plus pembrolizumab plus datopotamab deruxtecan. So this is kind of escalation on the first side, and also de-escalation with the combination of dato plus pembro in those patients with a low PD-L1 expression. So very interesting studies. It's actually ongoing as of today, and hopefully the recruitment will be rapid so that we can get a better sense of these combinations in the first-line setting.
All right, so we're going to now turn our attention to Module 3, integrating TROP2-targeting ADCs into the non-small cell lung cancer treatment arsenal. And this will be hopefully a very robust discussion between myself and Nicholas. And so let's get started. So the first topic that we're going to discuss today is identifying patients with non-small cell lung cancer who may benefit from TROP2-targeting ADCs. So Nicholas, do you want to give us your initial thought on how you're choosing these patients? There's a lot of different criteria we can talk about in specifics, but what's your high level takeaway here in terms of how we identify the correct patient?
Well, given the data that we have seen, I guess that non-squamous histology is probably the best way to select the patient for these strategies. In the TROPION-Lung01, there was no selection based on TROP2 expression. And this is expected given the mechanism of action of ADCs with this bystander effect, and actually a low expression of TROP2 may be sufficient to have this anti-tumor efficacy. Then looking at genomic alteration versus non-genomic alterations, we see a similar hazard ratio from the data that we have right now. So very interesting to see also that these are two different patient population: patient with genomic alteration, EGFR mutant lung cancer, ALK rearranged lung cancer. These patients have been treated in a later line than the others, because most of these patients had received one or two lines of targeted therapies. And here the strategy is probably very different from those patients. Patients with genomic alteration, we also have more and more options and sequencing of treatment. But at some point, these patients are in a position to fail after chemotherapy, possibly immune checkpoint inhibitors. And here we see a benefit also for these patients.
Yeah, good. So I'm just thinking about kind of the things that you've discussed in terms of the biomarker selection. What are your thoughts in terms of moving forward? Other thoughts in terms of potential biomarkers for these agents?
Well, it's always difficult to know. The key point is that TROP2 expression by immunohistochemistry seems to be quite hard to perform. Most of non-small cell lung cancers actually express TROP2. So, and here we probably have to also look at these patients from the trials, the long-term responders versus the others, and try to also stratify these patients to identify additional biomarker, if any biomarker may be identified. What do you think, Aaron?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that, you know, certainly the data in the non-squamous population is the way we can move forward. And certainly the data that you recently presented at ELCC was really helpful to have us see kind of a more complete picture. You know, my personal experience, there are squamous patients that benefit. Certainly at this time, there's no role for Dato-DXd in those patients in an unselected manner. But I am excited to see how these biomarkers hopefully evolve over time. And it would be great to have a biomarker, especially in those squamous population. Any hypotheses in terms of why the non-squamous patients may have performed better than the squamous population?
Probably it's not the same disease. It's not the same biology behind the two histologies, even if there are some common activated pathway and common oncogenes. at the end, this is not the same disease. The architecture is not the same. So the relationship between tumor cells is not the same. Here we have TROP2, which binds to some molecules implicated in cell-cell interaction and so on. So I easily see that these are different diseases, and looking at TROP2, maybe it's different in the two histologies. What we have learned also from the sacituzumab govitecan study based on the press release is that maybe another way to select the patients, maybe the kind of sequencing before treating the patients with sacituzumab govitecan, patients who had a response versus no response to previous treatment, especially immune checkpoint inhibitors. But this has to be confirmed, and we do not see that as of today in the datopotamab data.
I'm not aware of any smoking history to guide our decision one way or the other. Certainly, in the immunotherapy story, there was a suggestion that potentially smokers could have an improved response to immunotherapy approaches, but I'm not aware of anything with Dato-DXd. And I think that the presence or lack of brain metastases, I think this is an important point. I do think we're going to see some emerging data in this space, hopefully in the coming months, to give us a more complete story. But that's important. And I think that, you know, it was highlighted with a couple words on the TL01 trial. But I would say that there were many patients, as we saw, I guess we didn't see demographics here, but there are many patients with brain metastases that were enrolled. And patients were allowed to be enrolled as long as they didn't have active brain metastases, which were considered both symptomatic and untreated. So inactive brain metastases, even if they were small and had no symptoms, those would be allowed on trial. So there were a lot of patients with brain metastases enrolled on these evaluations of Dato-DXd, which I think is very appropriate given the burden of disease in patients. And we haven't seen any intracranial activity thus far with our TROP2 ADCs. But I think that, as I said, there'll be some additional data, but we have seen data with a molecule that's being evaluated in EGFR mutant disease, HER3-DXd or patritumab deruxtecan, and we do see intracranial benefit. I think that was somewhat surprising to us, given that these are large molecules and the fact that they may not cross the blood-brain barrier, but that data does suggest there may be some intracranial activity. And so I think there's a real possibility that we may see something similar in the TROP2 ADC space, which I think would be very encouraging for our patients. Nicholas, are there any other factors that aren't listed here that you think at this time are worth discussing in terms of positive or negative predictive benefit with our TROP2 ADCs in non-small cell lung cancer?
Well, I don't think so. Back to the story of the brain metastasis, it will be also interesting to look at the pattern of recurrence, especially in patients without brain mets at baseline, to see how protective is that Dato-DXd in those patients, which will be a kind of hint of the intracranial efficacy.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I'm glad you brought that up, because it's not only did a patient have a response in the brain, it's that did they have a history of brain metastases, and did they worsen or was there control? And as you also mentioned, even in patients without brain metastases, did they have progression in the brain? So that is a really good point. So I think hopefully, like I said, we'll have more data to look at in the coming months in this space. But I think that's something that we've all been asking and would be very interesting to see with these agents. So let's move on to the next slide. Okay, so this is looking at selection and sequencing of TROP2 targeting therapies with other available therapies. So we're thinking about different lines of therapy and patient populations. So maybe I'll start here because I threw most of the questions your way on the last one, Nicholas. I'll start and then kind of get your thoughts. So in terms of setting them in lines of therapy, certainly the data that we discussed today is in the advanced metastatic setting. And that's appropriate, again, in the second line and beyond setting. Appropriate for us to be evaluating our agents in the greatest area of need. We certainly have later line therapies, but after targeted therapies and chemotherapy plus or minus immunotherapy in our AGA patients and after chemoimmunotherapy in our non-AGA patients, our options aren't great. And so I think that's where the TROP2 ADCs hold the greatest immediate promise for advanced metastatic non-small cell lung cancer. But I think these other areas are all good places for us to be looking. I know you also discussed during the talk today, first line approaches, both sacituzumab govitecan and Dato-DXd are being evaluated in frontline approaches with immunotherapy, plus or minus chemotherapy in some settings. I think that's a very appropriate approach. And I think that my personal thoughts there, and I'd love to hear yours as well, are that, you know, these patients with advanced metastatic non-small cell lung cancer are very sick. And certainly it's great to have many lines of therapy that can be effective, but similar to what we've seen with a combination of chemo and immunotherapy in the majority of our patients, those that are less than 50% PD-L1 and those that are high PD-L1 with rapidly progressive disease, we combine those therapies. And I think it's important to get our best therapies to our patients as soon as possible. And so that's where I see this as potentially holding promise. In addition, in the frontline setting, if we're able to combine our TROP2 ADCs with an immunotherapy and spare the patient's frontline platinum doublet chemotherapy, that would allow that to come in the second line and potentially prolong benefit. I don't know, what are your thoughts about frontline approaches with TROP2 ADCs, Nicholas?
Well, I guess the second line population is kind of heterogeneous population, and you may not capture all this heterogeneity from the clinical trials. You have patients with remaining toxicities. You have patients with a large tumor burden, patients with a nutritional status that is not good, and so on and so on. So it is very hard to enroll these patients in clinical trials at the end. And still with Dato, we have a benefit in the non-squamous population. I guess the potential for these TROP2 targeted therapies will be even higher in earlier lines, as you mentioned. When we combine with immune checkpoint inhibitors, the challenge is to increase the response rate, because once you get a response while under immune checkpoint inhibitors, the response will be prolonged and you will achieve higher rates of long-term survival. So this is what we want with the first-line strategy. And also on the slide, we can mention the perioperative space. We have seen many data with perioperative immune checkpoint inhibitors. We see that here, again, it's a matter of response, pathological response after neoadjuvant treatment, and maybe integrating these agents in combination, kind of escalation, intensification of the neoadjuvant component will increase the pathological complete response, which is highly correlated with prolonged disease-free survival. So at the end, these agents may be integrated into the treatment sequences, not only for metastatic disease, but also for non-metastatic disease, early stage, and possibly locally advanced. We probably need to generate more data regarding the combination with radiotherapy, and I guess many studies are ongoing.
Yeah, no, I agree with everything you said. I think those are all really good points. And I think that the next line here is just patient populations. And I think the messaging really at this point, as you said, we need to be generating additional data across different lines of therapy. But at this point, I think we need to be squarely focusing our messaging on the non-squamous patient population. Okay, so let's move to the next slide. And I know this is an area that you and I have talked about a lot, and it's certainly one that's important to discuss. So adverse events, adverse event management. And I know we've talked about this before, Nicholas, and you've talked about an ADC clinic that you have. And so if you can share a little bit about that, I think that we've started to think about incorporating that at my institution as well. I think that's a really exciting approach. So maybe tell us a little bit about the ADC clinic and how that's worked and what's important in the TROP2 ADC space.
Well, the ADCs, it's a new mechanism of action, a new class of drugs in the treatment of patients with cancer, and we need to learn. It's a multidisciplinary management at the end, because you have mentioned the safety profile from Dato and the other drugs. Well, it's more complex, or it's different from what we have already, chemotherapy, immune checkpoint inhibitors, targeted agents, and we need to learn on how to manage these side effects. Stomatitis, dry eye are quite easy to manage once you know that these are associated with these drugs. You need the help from other healthcare professionals, nurses, ophthalmologists, and then as an oncologist, once you treat more and more patients, you become aware of these side effects and how to manage. You become able to manage a grade 1, and then you know that you need to refer or not the patient to a more specialized healthcare professional at the end. So this is a way to put together multiple people that are gaining experience in the management of these side effects. And not only the management of side effects, the prophylaxis, because once you know that stomatitis is observed in more than 50% of the patients, you become proactive and you start to give the patients prophylactic treatment to avoid the development of stomatitis. You start to treat grade 1 as a grade 2 and so on, and you avoid moving from a grade 1 to a grade 3, which would actually lead to interrupt the treatment with obviously a risk for a lower efficacy. So at the end, it's also a matter to discuss with all the healthcare professionals involved in the management of patients, which is good, which is a way also to monitor the patients. We have recently also implemented digital tools to monitor the patients while they are at home so that they are able to report those side effects and we can have a rapid response to manage these side effects.
Yeah, thank you for sharing all that. As I said, we've had similar discussions and you've talked about these clinics, and I think that they sound very important and effective. And I think that the big take-home message here is being very proactive. And as you said, you know, using prophylaxis when appropriate. In terms of the distinct AE profiles, just to highlight, we've got five specific AEs listed here. The diarrhea and neutropenia would be more common with sacituzumab govitecan. And the ILD, stomatitis, and ocular toxicities are certainly more common with Dato-DXd. So despite the fact that both are TROP2 targeting ADCs, both have a TOPO1 isomerase payload, they certainly do have distinct adverse event profiles. And I think that, as you nicely highlighted, Nicholas, it's just going to be important for all of us as these potentially roll out in the clinic in non-small cell lung cancer to be proactive about our management, proactive about response to early grade toxicity so that we can intervene before they become more significant. You did highlight stomatitis again with a rate of 54% in the Dato-DXd patients. From the data from TROPION-Lung01, the vast majority of those events were intervened on effectively and did not get to grade 3, as only 6% were grade 3 or higher. But as you mentioned, this is as a result of potentially prophylactic steroid-containing mouthwashes, good oral care, potentially using ice chips during the infusion, and all sorts of different maneuvers that can help minimize these toxicities. So that education is going to be critical, I believe, and I'm sure you agree, in with respect to both providers, patients, and the support in our clinics as we move forward. So let's move into our last topic, patient education. That's what I was just talking about and we talked about earlier. So, you know, I think from a high level, I'll start this. Antibody-drug conjugates, as I mentioned during the beginning of the talk in my overview, they're not new to oncology. We certainly have a lot of antibody-drug conjugates that are approved. We do have an antibody-drug conjugate in advanced metastatic non-small cell lung cancer approved, as we talked about, the HER2-targeting trastuzumab deruxtecan. So this is not a new concept. But it is something that we need to be talking about with our patients and talking about effectively with our patients. So the typical approach I use, and I think that resonates well with patients, is, as opposed to standard chemotherapy, which is active immediately upon introduction of the systemic circulation at the time of infusion, these are more of a targeted or a directed chemotherapy approach, such that the toxicity effect and this the cytotoxicity, the payload, only becomes active when it gets inside the tumor cell. I think that that's a concept that I think can be very effective and is very easy for patients to understand. I think that once that concept is learned, I think that, as we were just talking about, making sure that there's a comprehensive knowledge base in the clinic from providers to support staff and then hopefully down to the patient in terms of what toxicities to be aware of, how they'll be managed, what prophylactic strategies that are most important to introduce, so that there's good communication, and if toxicity does occur, we can intervene quickly. One toxicity we didn't talk about a lot today, but I think probably bears mentioning a little more in depth, is the ILD with Dato-DXd. It's similar in terms of what we're seeing with some of the other DXd ADCs, such as trastuzumab, deruxtecan, and patritumab. It's really important to watch for it. It can be steroid responsive, but you know, hard to diagnose in our patients because our patients already have abnormal lungs. So I think that, you know, as has been highlighted by both Nicholas and I on many of our discussions, you know, at first sign of new respiratory symptoms or if imaging changes suggestive of ILD, really need to be evaluating thoroughly and holding medication until we're certain that the ILD is not present, or introducing steroids as soon as possible if it is present. Other topics that you think we should discuss, Nicholas? We have, looks like, about a minute left, so probably not much more, but...
No, patient education. It's important that the patient is aware of which drug is actually delivered during the treatment. It's important also that the patient is aware, because when the patient see a pharmacist, see a general practitioner, you can explain, okay, it's not chemotherapy. I am aware about the safety profile and so on. Very important, because these drugs are actually different from everything else.
Yeah, I think that that's a really good point, especially, again, as we're potentially moving towards possible approval in the space, that as these drugs roll out, you know, many physicians, providers across different specialties and disciplines may not be as familiar with the toxicity profiles. And it's very common for patients to be asked, you know, what therapy you're on, and maybe not be very clear. So that's a really good point. I know that sometimes we've used like patient wallet cards to discuss ILD or mucositis. So those types of educational tools and empowering the patients, because they're not always going to be interfacing with our teams, you know, like in a community emergency room or something like that. So I think that's a good point. So we are just over time. I'd like to thank you, Nicholas, for joining us today. And I think this was a great lecture and a great discussion. I'd like to thank the PeerView team for putting this all together. And I hope that you as the audience have found this to be educational, and hopefully you'll join us on a future program. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
This activity is certified by PVI, PeerView Institute for Medical Education. Remember to download the slides and practice aids. Thank you for listening. Download materials and complete the post-test for instant credit at peerview.com/JVH860. This activity is supported by independent educational grants from AstraZeneca and Daiichi Sankyo Incorporated.